Welcome to Unsilent with your hosts, Dave and Brian. This is not another current events podcast. We're digging deeper, diagnosing, and discussing what's really going on today, how we got here, and providing observations for future generations.
Welcome to Unsilent. We're Brian and Dave. Let us know where you think we got it right and where you think we completely missed the point, which you can do by going to unsilentpodcast.com or on Rumble, which has a great comments section, or Facebook or other social channels. So let's get into it. And today I have a topic idea for us, Brian.
What you got?
I would like to talk about having babies.
All right. That's odd for two straight white dudes to talk about, I guess. But hey, it's your topic.
I just wanted to see your face when I said that. That's all. So back in the 1960s, there was a fellow by the name of Professor Paul Ehrlich. He wrote a book called The Population Bomb. In fact, he's still kicking around talking about things. And basically the idea was that the population explosion, because basically human population, the population of planet Earth has been growing for all of recorded history. I mean, it has its ups and downs, like when we lost half of Europe to the bubonic plague and, you know, a few things like that that happened from time to time. But generally speaking, the population of planet Earth has been increasing for a very long time. Now,
so what you're saying is during the plague, people didn't want to have sex with each other.
Well, it was either that or they didn't have enough sex because too many people died, you know. So okay, gotcha. I guess, right. You know, they should have gotten busier. They didn't get busy enough. So that's,
all right,
you know,
gotcha. All right.
It's a problem. It's a problem for a while. So you're going to keep bringing it back to this. I can see that. So anyway, the
I can't help it, man. I'm just a dude. What can I say?
You're just an old white guy. So anyway, the point before I was interrupted there was that back in the 60s and the 70s and even in the 80s, there was this idea that the population was expanding so rapidly, so much, they're going to run out of resources. They're going to run out of food. There's going to be mass starvation. I have this book. I believe in looking into the things that I disagree with. And so I've read the book. I've read the follow-on book that he wrote on that. And I've paid attention to that movement, not since the 60s because I was too young, but the idea that, for instance, there was a thought back in the 90s that we're going to run out of oil. It was called the peak oil idea, that we're not going to have enough energy and we're going to end up in an energy desert. That essentially there's too many people and that's the biggest problem, and it's going to cause, in the book, The Population Bomb, Ehrlich said that he thought by the 80s there would be mass starvation and then all these terrible predictions. The fact of the matter is none of it came true. Absolutely none of it came true. In the early 70s, we had innovations in growing wheat and other things that allowed populations to fewer people to starve. And now in where we're at in 2024, because of innovation and because of the general improvement in economic conditions across the planet, there are fewer people starving than probably we've ever had. So there's been a great improvement in a lot of different things. But my proposition to you, Brian, is this. And it's just not mine. It's not a novel theory, but the exact opposite of the population explosion, the population implosion, or as in demographic circles, they call it a demographic implosion. What to expect when nobody's expecting is perhaps one of the greatest threats to society, not just our society in the West, but one of the greatest threats to society on planet Earth overall. And the projection is that by the end of this century, by the time probably about by Kenny G's time, the population will have been decreasing on planet Earth for a significant time, and that will cause some very serious problems. Now, I'm going to lay out, as we talk about this, how that problem will result in more wars, and it already has, I believe. That problem will result in civil unrest. That problem will result in generational conflict between old people and young people. That will result in economic turmoil, perhaps like we've never ever seen before. It will result in every manner of societal ill and problem that you can imagine, whether it's disease, whatever it is. It will result in every manner of societal problem that you can imagine. And it's just because there's not enough people having babies or having enough babies.
So this is going to be a really uplifting episode is what you're saying.
Yeah, well, you know, doom and gloom, par for the course, you know, crisis here, right. All that stuff we talk about all the time. Well,
before we get to all those different sections you pointed out that are going to be bad consequences, and I don't disagree with that. Yeah. I want to go back to something you said in the very beginning, which was this was a theory that was put out there earlier. I remember, I don't know what grades I would have been in, maybe sixth or seventh grade or whatever, but I remember teachers pointing to China and India as examples of the dystopian future the whole planet had because of overpopulation. I remember specifically them talking about overpopulation being something we really had to watch out for. And while we didn't really like what China was doing with the one child policy, we could wrap our heads around it. And mostly what they didn't like about it wasn't that it only allowed one child. It was that it didn't allow very many female children. That was really, I remember correctly, you know, paraphrasing what my teachers were trying to, the knowledge they were trying to impart upon us was, the only thing they didn't like about it was they were more likely to abort female children than male children.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and so let's start with the foreign affairs situation. Well, first of all, let me start with the definition. What does it mean when there's population implosion? And we can start with sort of the big picture macro foreign issues. So replacement population is 2.1 children. This is not my theory. Yep. It's 2.1 children per couple. If you don't have that, and that sort of accounts for some couples that don't have children. So it's
an average.
That's what you need. It's an average. Yeah. So, and that's what you need to have a replacement population.
And the reason it's not two is because children die at young ages. There's freak accidents. There's freak diseases, there's things like that, that otherwise it would be two to have replacement, but you have to have the 0.1 to make up for the unfortunate percentage of the population where children die young.
Exactly. And the interesting thing is that in 183 out of 195 countries across the planet right now, they're below that.
Right.
Across the entire world, they're below that. China, we'll talk about that in a little bit. China has a population implosion problem. We'll talk about that in just a little bit.
So I remember first hearing about this in 2008, I think, 2009 maybe. And at that time, France was in trouble. Germany was in trouble. The United States was still okay. The United States was like at 2.2 or 2.3 at that time. China was at like 2.5 or 2.3, like they were doing fine. India was doing fine. It was specifically the kind of traditional European countries that were in the most trouble, and maybe even Australia, but it was like Western countries outside the US were the ones, and Canada, I think, was okay. Mexico was okay. But I know France, it was at like 1.7 way back then. The Netherlands, I think, maybe Finland, Sweden, you know, those kinds of Nordic countries, I think they were in jeopardy. Yep. So that was, you know, 15 years ago.
Well, and what's interesting is the general theory behind it is that as countries get richer and as the world gets richer, people have fewer children. I mean, when you're richer, you have more options. You have more things you could do because you've got more money and you've got more things you could spend it on. You could have careers. And so, and this is another reason why we find that in China and in India and other places that have advanced economically, that's become a problem for them as well. Now, some countries like France has had some recovery. Some of the countries have had some recovery, and they have had very strong measures to try and get incent people. Now, you can't force people to have kids. It's not you don't go in and say, okay, now you're going to do it. But you can incent people to do it. Now, but most of the world has not had a good time with that. So
Native Americans did force each other to have sex. They did force them after the marriage ceremony. Part of the finality of the marriage ceremony was they did force the couple into the teepee.
I suppose we could learn something from our forebears here.
Yeah.
You know, if it gets too bad, well, you know, I think there's, and of course, if you watch The Handmaid's Tale, which is one that the left is particularly interested
I can't say I saw that one. Sorry. I'll put on my Netflix watch list.
I watched half of one episode, and it was I didn't watch it anymore.
Series, but okay. Well, you've already lost me then.
It's a series. It's about women being forced to have children because there's a problem in the earth, and of course that's what the Republicans want to do, is force all the women to have children by passing anti-abortion laws and stuff. So it's a Handmaid's Tale.
Got it. Okay.
So if you look across the world, as the world has gotten richer, people have had fewer children. Now, you might think, well, this is a good thing, you know, because then we're not going to be eating up all the world's resources. You know, one of the reasons that I have, you know, this has been an interesting topic to me since the 1990s, because I've kind of watched that. And I've been of the opinion for a very, very long time that Earth has plenty of capacity to support all of us. And I think that's proven out by our ability to use resources more effectively. And more than half of the Earth's population, you know, 100 or 150 years ago was involved in agriculture because that's what it took to feed people. Now we've got in the United States, like 2% of the population feeds everybody in the entire country. And we export a bunch of stuff and we're all overweight. So, you know, there has never been really a resource problem.
But it does sound like the right answer. We won't be using as much water. We won't be using as much oil. We won't be using as much real estate. We won't be using as much land to grow agriculture and whatever it is when land kind of wears out from having too many crops grown and things like that.
Right.
Most importantly, if we don't have too many people, there won't be people in my way when I go on vacation to the beach. That's the most important part is not having the beaches I want to be on overpopulated while I'm there.
Right. Well, and now the other popular thing on the environmental left, or I'm going to say the extreme left, is we don't want to have kids because they're going to breathe and they're going to fart and then we're going to have more carbon in the air and we'll save precious Mother Earth. Well, you know, so there's that.
I'm being kind of funny, but not like the point is, it sounds like the good thing is to not overpopulate, because I can tell you from my generation, that was, we were taught that let's not wear out the earth, you know, seems like that, but I hear what you're saying. So help me understand what's the downside.
Okay. So let's start locally, but then we'll move it out from there. So one of the big problems, and we'll start with just the United States, and I'll get some stats here I can share with that. We also have not only a demographic implosion, we also have extreme longevity. We have an aging population. So there's more and more people that are senior citizens as time goes on, because we live better, we have better health, et cetera. And we've got fewer people on the young side. The balance between old and young is really shifting. Now, fascinating, when Social Security, as an example, was passed in FDR's in the 1940s, there was I think it was like 47. I've got the actual stat here. It's like 47
people. I thought it was in the 30s. Wasn't it like 1933 when that was passed, along with the income tax revision, and where they started?
Now in 1940, however, we'll pick that year. In 1940, there were 42 workers for every retiree. And so therefore, your Social Security would have 42 people that were backing it up.
Yep.
Today, in 2024, the ratio is 3-1. So when you retire in some number of years, it's going to be fewer than that. But right now it's 3 people to support one retiree. By the year 2050, it's going to be 2-1. So how much effort are 2 people going to have to put in to support full-time one person? So there's an economic problem there. It's unsustainable.
So let me ask you a question. Do you know, and you may not, and if you don't, that's fine, but okay, part of this could be because of the population growth slowing, but also part of that equation could be the benefits the retiree gets now are much higher in proportion to the wage earner's income than they were in 1940. So for example, both of those are true. Okay. The reason I bring this up is because I think one of the reasons our government is so dysfunctional right now is because there's certain things that you just cannot talk about, and Social Security is one of them. It doesn't matter who you are. If you talk about reducing Social Security benefits, you won't be reelected. Not going to be. The population has decided we want this safety net, and lots of pork, I'm guessing, is thrown in with quote unquote Social Security bills that inflated directly, indirectly, or not at all related to Social Security. And these things are all just kind of lumped in. But it's absolutely not something that can be talked about in D.C. because if you talk about it, you will not be reelected. And people will, you like your opposition, whoever you're running against, would absolutely like use this as the dagger in the heart of your campaign of getting reelected. Like, you know, Dave said he wants to cut back Social Security benefits. Even though we're going bankrupt, like Dave's not going to get elected. Like everyone knows that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's only half of the equation. That's only half the equation of the problem.
So the reason I bring that up again is because it feels like this is, it's not the thing. And it's not even, I wouldn't even say it's one of the top five things, but it's a significant thing, I think, as far as why our government is becoming so dysfunctional that we can't. And again, I'm not even saying that the answer is to reduce Social Security benefits. I am saying that there are things like that that are taboo to even be discussed. And so we can't even weigh out like how much of the dollars spent for entitlement packages like that versus something like, you know, I don't know, paying illegal immigrants $50 billion or whatever it is to have the Visa card that come, you know, that's in the cell phones there. Like, those conversations are not even allowed. And so how could the government even be functional over the long term if you can't have conversations about the things that are costing the most, are the most expensive to manage, and all that stuff? So it's kind of related, but kind of not related. But this is a huge part of why we're, what feels like to me, heading to this like fiscal cliff we're getting ready to jump off of.
Well, and the other part of that fiscal cliff with regard to old people is old people cost a lot, not just to feed and house and et cetera. They don't cost any more than you or I do because we're very young. But what the other part of it is, old people have expenditures, medical expenditures, that are far in excess. So the top 5% of the age distribution average about $98,000 a year in medical expenses.
Another thing that wasn't around in 1940 was lawyers going after doctors for malpractice and things like that. Like, the cost of doing business in medical has gone absolutely through the roof. Like,
yes.
And these things are all just amplifying what you're talking about with the population decline. Yes. Like, all these things are factors, and it's creating this like soup of just dysfunction and bankruptcy or pending bankruptcy.
Well, and so if you've got more old people, you've got fewer young people to support them. If it takes seven times the amount of medical expenses for the top 5% of the age distribution than it does anybody under about, you know, 40 years old, you've got the second half of that fiscal problem with not enough young people and too many old people. So I would put it in one of the top maybe two or three fiscal problems that we've got, because we can't, we just are not going to be able to sustain this.
Well, in 80 years to go from 42 to 3 on our way to 2, that's incredible.
Yeah. Well, then we're in deep stuff. Well, the other part of that equation is then that old people tend to vote more than young people. By a long shot. Mm-hmm. And so you've got the political population, you've got the political will is all in the older population. The younger people, this is where I said generational conflict. At some point, when it's one worker has to support with their efforts, the entire cost of living of one old person, and it'll get there at some point if we're not careful, then this young person who says, hey, I can't even afford a house. I can't afford to pay, you know, I can't afford to go out to McDonald's, you know, once a month. How does this leave me? You're in a very dangerous societal spot just on that one simple measure. And that's just one of many measures that happen when that happens.
Which is probably why these things get reset every handful of generations.
Well, exactly. Because you're right. They're in a crisis scenario. There is nobody that has the will to deal with this. There's really nobody who's got the will to deal with that. And the only way that's going to happen is if there's strong societal cohesion. Now, when was the last baby boom? It was in the high era, right after the crisis era. So we can only hope that that's when people start having kids again, is when they're strong.
And I remember, again, I don't have statistics because this was many, many years ago when I was in school, but I remember hearing that you know, after major wars in Roman times and World War II and the
right.
Civil War and in different, you know, the Japanese-Russian War and World War I, like all these different wars, there's a noticeable, like women historically are like 51.5% of the population or something like that, 51%, right. something like that. Post-major wars, men, more male babies are born than female babies. And nobody had, at that time at least, nobody had an explanation for that other than like, you know, Mother Nature knows that we need more men to, yes, to
killed a bunch
to procreate
of
them. and to start making babies again. And
right.
So it's interesting that, you know, all these things tie together, the population decline. Part of the reason I'm not freaking out about this is because I just have a deep belief that post-crisis, Mother Nature is going to fix this because
yeah,
we'll have to. And yes, we might have these big, we might have a cliff we go off as far as population, but people, whatever's left, people want to rebuild. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, the interesting thing, however, in this situation, I think there will be a post-crisis baby boom. I mean, there usually is a post-crisis baby boom. That's a normal thing. The mitigating factor on that, however, is that the technological advancement and the general, you know, the amount of wealth that people on Earth will have in the year 2100, at least according to most, you know, projections, is substantially more than it is today. It's, you know, across the world will be a substantially richer planet. I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head, but I've seen them. And there's pretty broad concurrence about that. So that our standard of living in 2100 will probably be a lot better than it is now, you know, assuming we don't nuke ourselves or something. And if that is the case, then see, that's a counter pressure against having children that hasn't right. existed to the great extent that it does now. So
and what are people going to do for a living? Because AI and robotics are coming along, and AI and robotics will be doing a lot of jobs that people do now. And you can't have more population than you have jobs.
Well, and see, this is now, here's the other people have talked to me about, and a lot of the AI, we've talked about AI before, but a lot of the AI pundits are worried about job losses because of AI and robotics. And I agree that there's going to be job losses because of AI and robotics, but it seems to me that it's very probable that the unfilled jobs, and I think right now we're in a population implosion right now. We've got a lot more jobs that are open and are available than we have people to fill them. And it's not because of the federal government, either under Biden or Trump, has done a wonderful job of creating, you know, economic, you know, success. It's because we don't have enough people. Now, it's very possible if the demographic implosion continues and AI and robotics continue to advance, that those can help balance each other out. So there is less of a challenge of the not enough people, not enough young people to fill the jobs where there's too many old people to support. So maybe we'll have in 2050, two young people and one robot to support you and me in our dotage, as they used to call it, in our old age.
Yeah.
So those are potentially mitigating factors. But let's take a look at, because we're just for time's sake, let's take a look at foreign countries and what happens as a result of foreign countries not having enough population. It's my proposition or my hypothesis that one of the great reasons that Russia has been so so aggressive in foreign attacks is because of their well-documented and they're acutely aware of their own population implosion. Their birth rate decline is among the developed world, probably either the worst or it's one of the worst. In some years, they've had more abortions than they have had live births. They have they have a huge, huge problem with deaths from alcoholism. You know, they're just drinking too much bloody vodka. So they have a their population, they're the largest physical geography on the earth, and their population is crashing faster than almost than any other European nation. And as a result of that, but Vladimir Putin, I mean, he's an evil guy. Say what you will about him. And this is nobody accused me of being a Putin supporter. I'm not. I hope he, you know, hope he kills over tomorrow. Hope he's not listening. But Vladimir Putin, for all of his problems, is a Russian patriot. He wants to see the Russian people survive. At the current rate, they will not survive. They will break up as a country, and Eastern Russia will probably become part of something else, and Southern Russia. And so what's he doing? Since he's been in power, they've been paying people to have babies. They've been trying to, the year of the child was like 2001 or something over there. I don't remember the exact date. But they realize that they've got an existential crisis on their hands. And if they don't have more people, the Slavic, you know, the patriotic Slavic lifestyle will die. So what do you do if you cannot get more Slavs by birthing them? Well, there's a ready supply of them over in Ukraine.
Yeah, you can either import them, or you can conquer, or you can enslave and capture. Yeah,
exactly right.
You only got a few options for sure.
And there's a fascinating, again, this is not my original idea. There's a fascinating book that folks can read if they're interested in this. It's called Implosion, The Death of Russia and What It Means for the United States. I think it was written back in the 2008, 2009 timeframe. And it talks about how an existential threat to the United States is a dying Russia, because they'll do exactly what they're doing now. And one of the major reasons that they are dying is because they're not having enough kids. And so therefore they go to Moldova, they go to Ukraine, they go to Georgia, you notice a lot of the countries that they're invading are not maybe Central Asian countries, but they're the countries that have Slavic people. And that's the Slavic Russian lifestyle. That's
a silly question. Like, my understanding, I'm not a Russian historian. I don't understand how their government works. My understanding is that it's fairly totalitarian, that if Vladimir Putin and the Politburo decided they didn't want to have abortions anymore, they would just outlaw that. So why don't they just outlaw abortions and let the population grow?
Well, you know, I think there are limits to what their abilities are in doing that. I mean, it's like, let's outlaw alcoholism because they're losing, you know, huge numbers of people to.
Well, let's not get crazy. I didn't say do that.
Sorry, you can leave your liquor cabinet in order.
I mean, they live in the Siberia, for crying out loud. Like, let them have some vodka. Jeez.
Right, exactly right. You got to keep warm somehow. Well, it seems, I mean, they are attempting, they have been culturally attempting to push things that are pro, you know, pro family policies, not because I think Putin's a big family guy, but to preserve the nation. I just think there's a limitation.
It's a predominantly Christian nation, isn't it? Or religious. I mean, there's a lot of Islam there. There's a lot of Judaism. And it's a predominantly religious country, though, isn't it?
It's predominantly Russian Orthodox is the official state religion. And, you know, and I would draw a distinction between a religious country and a country of faith, right? Because Putin uses all the terminologies of religion, and they've, you know, Hitler had a minister of religion that wanted to basically supplant Christianity with a new type of pagan Christ, which was an Aryan Christ. He said actually that God was in the blood and of the people. It wasn't, you know, for grace and all that kind of stuff. So it's something
like that. Okay. All right.
So the bottom line here is that Russia is dying. And as a result of that, a cornered dying bear, the Russian bear, is becoming much more aggressive.
Yes.
Just as I think it might've been, was it Rick Berman who wrote that book? I can't remember who wrote that book, but it's Implosion, The Death of Russia and What It Means for the West. That stands to, it's already created war in Europe. And if they're not successful somehow, it will get even worse. Now let's take a look at China as another example. China, as you said, they had a one child policy. They reversed that not too long ago. And now they are actively encouraging, and one child and males were preferred, right? And so now what do you have? You have a too heavy weighting of Chinese males to Chinese females. So you get a bunch of young Chinese males that can't find women. What are you going to do as a country? Well, you know, there are other Asian countries around where you can go find females. So they're in a dangerous position. They also know that their economy is stalling out. Their economy is in a very bad place. They, you know, for a lot of different reasons, not just implosion, but they face the same challenges that we have in the West in terms of economic implosion because of lack of workers projected into the future, because you're not having babies, you got no new workers, you can't. And there's a myth in economics that an economy can't keep expanding forever. That's not really true. An economy does naturally expand over time, if it's a healthy economy, with periodic resets, recessions, you know, hopefully recessions, not depressions. And then 7, 8, 9 years, you get a recession, you get a reset, and it keeps on going up. So it goes up and up and up and up. And that's what's happened on planet Earth for as long as we have, you know, especially since the Industrial Revolution. And yeah, that's what's in danger. And as soon as that is in danger, as soon as the economics are in danger, that's when you get war. That's when you get civil unrest. That's when you get strife. And that's really probably the biggest problem with this economic implosion. Now, demographic implosion, we have not had that so much in the United States for one particular reason. And that's because of immigration.
Right.
That's why we have not felt as much of the economic unrest as these other nations have. I mean, look at Japan. Japan, they have real problems with sex dolls, because men in Japan are buying sex dolls because they're a lot lower maintenance than Japanese women, apparently. I mean, and so their population lower maintenance. Has been falling.
All right. That's,
you know,
it's less demanding for sure.
this is where I revert to our intro. And if you have a different opinion, you can leave us a message on Rumble.
I'm going to give your wife the Rumble page so she can chime in on the.
We can leave a message for me about about high maintenance and low maintenance.
Right.
But they have a real problem there with sex dolls, sex toys, porn, all of that, because they have that demographic implosion happening as well. I read the statistics recently about how long Japan can survive as a functional economy with the current decline that they've gotten. They've had decline for probably longer than most countries have. And yeah, it's not that long.
Japan's in a situation where they can't. Immigration can't solve their problem because they are committed to maintaining the Japanese bloodline, and they are not interested in integrating different races and stuff like that into their. So immigration is not a solution for them.
Exactly right. Yeah, exactly right. So they're hoping for, you know, Mitsubishi, Honda, and the others getting robots, but there's a great concern in their culture about whether you know, sex bots are going to take. To hasten the demographic implosion. So that's a problem
that was not on my radar that was something to watch out for. So
I read lots
and,
of.
And Kenny G, maybe Kenny G won't even be a person name because the sex bot industry is going to take over and like that will be a population of 7 before you know it.
That could very well be. So this is another problem with this whole idea of population decrease. And so the question is, how can that be increased? So in a lot of countries, in fact, the countries that have had turnarounds, France, Sweden, others, now not sufficient to get to 2.1, but they've had some turnarounds. I think it was, let's see, France. In France, they give people with children, two or more children, $150 cash per month. They have means tested grants so that every new birth gets €1,000 right away at birth for each child that they've got. So they take a little bit of a different approach, or they take that type of thing. In Sweden, they've been able to turn their fertility rate from 1.7, which is really low, up to 1.9. And what they do, this is fascinating. Parents receive about $170 a month per child, which increases at the age of 11 and at the age of 15, parents are entitled to 480 days of parental leave.
480 days?
480 days of parental leave.
So if you have a kid every 14 or 15 months, you just don't ever have to work again?
You just don't ever have to go back to work again. The working hours in Sweden are lower than most other countries, and the child poverty rate is very low. So what happens with this demographic implosion idea as well is you end up with probably a huge social safety net and huge taxes.
Right.
And who's going to bear the brunt of those taxes?
All those newborns.
Well, eventually, but yeah, in the short term, it's going to be the old people.
Yeah.
So there's your, there's again, your source of societal unrest between the old and the young. Then, and so you can see on all of these different fronts how this stands to be a serious problem across the globe and probably until about the year 2100, unless we have a major, war that everybody gets busy afterwards.
Right. Well, I remember, you know, I was telling you about earlier when I heard about this, you know, population replacement rate and all that kind of stuff 15 years ago or so, whenever that was.
Yep.
The, at that time, you know, France was like 1.7 or in Germany's like 1.9 or whatever the numbers were. They were in trouble though.
Right.
And exceptions to that and areas of the world where this was, there was no problem were especially Islamic regions. Their replacement rate was like 2.5 or something like that. They were having a lot of kids, and you know, more devout religious areas, like in Utah, for example, Mormons were having lots of kids and stuff like that. There was pockets of places where there was the replacement rate was way high, but generally speaking, it was low. And I don't know the numbers as far as like by religion and stuff like that. Now, I this is not something I've done a lot of research on, but what I find fascinating about the things that we're seeing in popular culture, you know, transgenderism is a thing. And like, right. I saw something like Generation Z, like 30% of kids consider themselves of Generation Z consider themselves either trans or non-binary or furries or like whatever. It was like 30% though. It was a right. huge number. Right. And so what yep. struck me is, The thing I find interesting about that is those people are less likely to have kids, and religious people are more likely to have kids.
Right.
And so if you fast forward 30 years, those people who embrace these trans ideologies will be the vast minority again. Though they're because the math is just the math.
Right.
You know,
right.
The people who have kids are going to be much more of the population. And so the people pushing these ideologies that don't allow for, frankly, or don't encourage reproduction are going to find themselves being a very, very tiny percent of the population again. And they'll probably be, their views and their outlooks will be not very favorable again.
It's sort of self-limiting, isn't it?
It's
kind of self-limiting. So there's, and this is back to our point that we make every episode, that is reality ultimately always wins. And, and that will happen in this too. There are some potential negative bumps along the road, as well. And I mean, you mentioned one of them is you mentioned Japan. If they don't do something, they will essentially die as a culture. But if they do something, they fear losing their culture. And so, you know, you've got countries, which one? There was one of the countries recently in Europe that I can't remember which one, whose native born population is increasing far less, dramatically less than their non-native born population. And so there's a fear that they will lose their culture and there will therefore be a diminishment of trust among the remaining citizens. Yeah. Another downside of this is when the strife comes between, we don't have enough young people to support all the old people, the young people that get to power will naturally say, well, you know, you remember when we were talking about Obamacare, we were talking about death panels? This idea of, you know, how long can we really afford these 90-year-olds or these 80-year-olds? You know, yeah. Maybe there should be a natural end of life kind of scenario. Difficulties in funding the not just Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, but anything having to do with elder care. Here's another one for you. What if you don't have enough young people? What suffers the most? What is only populated by young people in positions of active positions? The military. So right. Do you make yourself, if you've got a significantly older population and not enough young people? And I mean, look at the United States. What's the biggest problem the military has? Recruitment. We already don't have enough young people joining the military. And you can't have the generals going out there because, you know, they're getting prostate surgery and stuff. So right. You've got that. Here's one I was talking about recently with somebody who said, well, I don't want to have a child because I don't want more carbon on the earth, carbon emitters, and, you know, polluting the earth, yeah, and that kind of stuff. And I said, look, here's the, you want to solve climate change, you want to solve environmental problems, what do you need more of? And she said, well, we need more conservation. I said, no, you need more innovation. Innovation, yeah, is the only thing that solves human problems. If you're limiting the number of people being born, you are naturally limiting the most rare thing in the universe. And that is sentient life and intelligence. I mean, just because somebody's born doesn't mean they're going to be smart, but you're statistically limiting the reality of whether or not you're going to be able to solve climate change, because it's going to be solved by smart people, not by people who've never been born. So there's all of these issues.
Well, again, I would put those folks in the camp as the transgender folks who believe that less people is more, and they will self-select themselves out of populating the future ideas of society.
Yeah, well, sure, that's true. I think that is when reality imposes itself again.
Right. Aside from big gnarly things happening, and it sounds like some of these things are like countries are trying these subsidies as far as like cash or time or whatever. Is there any other information or data to suggest like historically how people have come out of this other than, you know, I know how Rome did it.
Yeah. <know? laughs> No, I mean, the only ways that that's ever happened, the only ways that it's ever been, because we've never really faced it like we do now. We've never really faced it as an affluent planet. The affluency of the planet is what is the biggest challenge right now. It's gone in ebbs and flows, but it's always gone in ebbs and flows going up. You know, I mean, the biggest natural disasters, of course, you naturally, yeah, recover after that. And we've never had abundant food and an abundant shelter. Everything we've got in abundance these days. So we've never had, there's not a historical precedent for where we are at right now. So, and
isn't it fascinating that life is, you know, as you're citing, life has never been easier than it is now. Like, mm-hmm, there's never been a point in time where life is easy. It was not easier than now in 350 AD or 1200 BC, right? It's easier now than it's ever been. And we're quite possibly, I mean, we don't know the numbers from 1208 BC or whatever, but we're quite possibly facing the biggest population decline percentage-wise in the history of our species in this moment when life is the easiest.
It's ironic.
Isn't that fascinating to think about, like, the psychology behind how that could even be a possibility?
Right. Well, it's fascinating to me also, if you look at it historically, if you look at a lot of the religious laws of the old times, Old Testament, et cetera, they were all based on the first commandment in the Bible. And that is be fruitful and multiply, get out there and have babies, have lots and lots and lots of babies. Cause you can have 10 babies and five of them are going to die. And you need the other five to work the fields to give you enough food. That's been the imperative of human life. Up until very, very recently, has been to have enough babies so that you've got enough support, so your family will not die, your tribe will not die, your region will not die. You know, your squire won't be taken over by the duke down the road. You've got enough military people. It's always been about that. It's only been recently that we've thought, well, maybe too many people is a problem. So it could very well be that this sort of ironic situation that we find ourselves in is both self-limiting and is a reimposition of values by God or the universe, whatever you want to believe, that having babies is one of the most noble, important things you can do. It's your contribution to the survival of the human species. I mean, as far as we know, I mean, maybe there's other civilizations out there in space. I don't know. I tend to think maybe there are, but I don't have any idea. But if we're the only thing there is, then the most rare thing in the entire universe could be human life and human intelligence. And
you're going down a different path than my brain's going, which is great, because you know mine is I don't have the education you do for sure, so that's probably a good thing. But my thought is, as I'm going through, you know, thinking about these things, I'm thinking about the sex bots and the sex dolls and the abortion And well, not just because of that, but we've become so narcissistic.
Yeah,
as a collectively, right? So yes. if you look at all these things, the sex bots, the sex dolls, abortions, and things like that, and I'm not taking position for or against any of those things. I'm just saying that they are things and they exist. In each of those cases, they're a narcissistic behavior.
Absolutely,
having sex with a sex bot instead of an actual woman is narcissistic because, as you pointed out, and I'm sure you're going to tell your wife later, much less demanding the sex bot is than the actual human who might have certain expectations or requirements for whatever, right? Same with a sex doll and an abortion. Again, I'm not making positions on this, but you're putting your needs above the needs of the child that would be born.
Right.
These are all narcissistic traits at their core. Right. And that coupled with, I heard a statistic not long ago that something like 38%, I think was the number, of young men between the ages of 18 and 30 have never had sex,
mm-hmm.
which is like unbelievable. I mean, I would be shocked if it was 3.8% when I was 21. I mean, it's just now again, I don't know. I never heard any statistics on that. Maybe it's much higher. But my thought was like, if I was able to have sex, like anybody could have sex. That's kind of how I looked at it. Right. So it's just baffling to me that was such a huge number. And then you add in these, like, what I would call like narcissistic tendencies. Only a very affluent society, only a very affluent global populace could have the luxury of doing those things. At no point in history we had it this easy, and therefore we didn't have the ability, or as you like to say, we couldn't afford to do those things because you needed people to go work the fields, and you had to have seven kids because two of them might die of dysentery or whatever. And it's interesting to me. It's just like stepping back and looking at this as a kind of a insight into the human psyche and human psychology. Like, the easier things get, we don't do things that are fulfilling. We do things that are selfish.
And we also don't feel the societal obligation to have children. So that's one of the things that's been lost. I think when my parents, during my parents' time, before then, for most of human history, people felt they had, not just for themselves. I mean, we have a desire to reproduce ourselves. It's just part of our genetics, I think. But there's also sort of a societal expectation and obligation that you're going to have children. And having children requires a tremendous amount of selflessness. You can't be fully narcissistic if you're going to be caring for children. And so,
you and I have talked about this in other topics, like the move from duty to entitlement over the last 80 years is stark. Now, you and I tend to talk about it in like militaristic terms. Like, you can't be in a foxhole with a guy and not have a duty to protect that. You wouldn't last very long in the Battle of the Bulge being an entitled narcissist in a foxhole. They would take care of that. You by necessity, you had to have a duty to take care of those around you. Well, I believe how you do anything is how you do everything. And so it's not just in the military foxhole. It's also how we look at all these other kinds of things. Right. And I mean that like for the entire society. So some people didn't go to war, but they still had a sense of duty. They had a duty to support the collective society and the United States. If you were if you lived in the United States, if you couldn't go to war, you did other things. You drove the bus to take care of the kids, or you went like Rosie the Riveter or like whatever it was. Right. And now as things have gotten easier, we don't do things that are more fulfilling, even though it'd be easier for us to do that. We do things that are more selfish and narcissistic. And I think that's just a fascinating piece of this that it's hard for me to overlook. Like, it's just a little glimpse into the human psyche.
Well, and it's also very damaging into the individual and to the culture, because for instance, as you become more narcissistic and selfish, by definition, you care less about people around you. You care less about, in our society, we tend to shuttle old people off to nursing homes and say, stay there out of my sight. Well, you know, I'll come visit you once a month or whatever. So, you know, whereas in other cultures, they, not here. I've got my little space. And so,
and everyone should stop doing that except for me when I'm going to my beach. When I'm going to the beach, then it's, going to the beach I want to go to, it, then it's okay.
You can carve out your little narcissistic patch and be there, period.
Right. And the underlying message here, kids, from Dave, go have more babies. Go procreate more. Get rid of the sex bots. Like, okay, Junior, like you can have one in your closet when the honeymoon's over and you've been married for 7 years, fine, drag it back out. But for now, go find a real woman.
go find a woman, get married, have kids, support those kids. You'll be a better person for it.
Right. So, let's get that ratio back up to 42-1 and life will be good again.
Exactly right. Problem solved.
Problem solved. All right. Well, I like that we solved the problem for a change, Dave. I like that we did that.
You know, every now and then, if anybody's listening.
All right. So, as usual, we want to hear where you think we're completely missing the boat. And like we covered a lot of stuff here that, Dave's, like the information he gives or not, Dave's good about providing like data and statistics, things like that. So we're not looking for you to argue the statistics so much, but we would like to know where you think we're getting it wrong. As far as, are we explaining what this moment in time is like incorrectly? We're trying to explain to Kenny G what this moment in time is like with all the different chaos that's going on around us. And we'd love to get your input. Great place to do that is on our Rumble channel. There's a great comment section there for videos. You go to unsilentpodcast.com. As Dave mentioned, there's social media channels other than that as well. And until next time, this is Dave and Brian signing off.
See you next week.
Do you want to be on Silent? Make your voice heard on our social media channels and share where you think we got it right or wrong. Go to unsilentpodcast.com for social links so you can join the discussion.